have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, back with another episode of the Business Broker Growth Show. I have the amazing Jim Parker on the show with me today. Very excited for this. Jim is the founder of The Boss Group, the Auto Repair Boss, and the Lawn Boss, which we'll dive into and we'll talk more about that. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Jason, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk to you today.
This is going to be a blast. I know it's going to be really valuable. If there happens to be somebody listening to this, especially in the broker world, and they don't know who you are, I'm just going to do a quick run through. I can't do it enough justice. I would have to take up most of our time, I think, to go through all of your credentials and your past. It's online. They can find it. It'll be in the show notes. There'll be some links. You've been doing business brokerage for nearly 25 years. I think thousands of transactions. I lost count when I was going through all the stuff. Working with sellers and buyers, you've been a part of lots of transactions. You started out as a general broker. We'll just call it a general broker or generalized broker, and helping all kinds of industries. You have four certified distinctions, designations in the industry: M&A, MI, CMNA, MCBI, and CBI, which according to you, less than 40 people in the world have all four of those, which is amazing. You were and are on the board of the Business Brokers of Florida Association, and you are now, as of this recording, January 2026, the chairman of the IBBA, the National Association. You're a speaker, radio host, podcast host, award winner, and most importantly, you know, what I appreciate is that you're a great professional for the industry, for your clients, and builders of teams within your organization. So I know we're going to have a lot of fun. Did I cover most of the
Jason, you're making me blush. You're making me blush.
I thought about reading through all of them and I was like, oh man, then, you know, it's definitely going to make him blush. But I appreciate, I think one of the things is, you know, that's kind of sets this up, and what I appreciate about you in getting to know you is that, you know, you had a podcast before called Let's Chat with Jim Parker that was with business brokers for the Business Broker Association, with just trying to help out and elevate things. Like, that doesn't necessarily help you in any business capacity because you're not selling to business brokers, you're helping business owners, but you're just doing it to be a part of it. You do training for the IBBA just because, you know, which I think says a lot about you.
Well, thank you. No, Jason, the Let's Chat that I was doing for business brokers, that came about because in 2020, it was my third term as the chairman of the Business Brokers of Florida, and COVID hit. And when COVID hit, in my 25 years, or at that time, 20 years, I had never experienced anything like that. And I was a deer in the headlights, Jason. I'm thinking to myself, if I'm the chairman of the Business Brokers of Florida, which, you know, is the largest state or regional association. I mean, the IBBA is bigger, but they're an international association. I was like, you know, if I'm the chairman of the BBF and I am a deer in the headlights, can you imagine what everybody else feels like? And that's how I was like, I need to find out some information, figure out what was going on. And I was like, you know, I can call attorneys and SBA lenders and call these people and, you know, try to piece things together. I was like, you know, but this would be great for the whole member, for everybody, for the membership of the BBF. So that's why I started doing the podcast. And then, I don't know, it just kind of caught on, and then brokers all over the United States and Canada started listening to it. So it was really cool. I really enjoyed doing that. I did that for about 2 years until COVID was kind of way past us. And that was a lot of fun. And I got to meet a lot of fantastic business brokers across the United States because of that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that stands out to me, and I think this is just generally good ideas, is, you know, solving your own problem. Like, when people do that, when they take on something where they're like, I'm going to solve my own problem, I'm going to help myself and people like me with a situation, like where that leads to, so much better than like, I'm just going to go do this thing because this is the business I want to run. Like, you're doing that, it's solving it. And then it just evolves into so much more. When we talk about like business owners, right? Because, you know, this podcast is found by business owners, buyers, brokers, you know, the partners in the transaction. When you've done as many transactions, been as many as you have, like hundreds and hundreds of owners that you've dealt with, or, you know, the countless ones that you've not dealt with. When you first talk to that business owner, what do they usually think selling a business is like versus what it actually is?
A lot of times they have no idea and they don't realize how involved the process can be, because it is a very involved process. I mean, I think that most of them are looking at it from, you know, it's like selling your house or selling a piece of commercial property, which it is. I mean, kind of it kind of runs the same kind of process from beginning to end. However, like there's just a lot more intricate details when selling a business. And, you know, we as any broker out there that's helping a business owner sell their business, a large part of our job is to take a huge workload off their shoulders, but it's still going to require the seller to be engaged and be involved. And it is going to still take them a good amount of time because we're still going to need their help getting across the finish line. We need them involved in the process. So it can be time consuming. And I think another big one is that they're usually very unrealistic about their asking price. You know, most business owners think their business is worth a lot more than it really is. And, you know, that's why I think right now when people are getting close to retirement, if they're 2 or 3 years out, you should be getting a valuation done on your business, you know, 2 or 3 years out.
So let's go to the first part and then we'll talk about the second part. And so the first part is interesting because they think that it's easier than it is. There is no real comparison if you've not sold a business. So you're thinking of, you know, what else have you sold that's similar to it? It should be similar. Like you said, like with a house, with a residential property, hire a realtor. There's a process. Everyone knows what to do. Everyone plays nice. And it's pretty standard and it doesn't require a full forensic audit of all of your finances right. and decisions you've ever made in life to that point, right? How often is it where, you know, that business owner says, great, Jim, you and your team are going to help me. This is amazing. Let me know what happens. You know, and then they basically fall away or they don't do their homework or they're not, you know, actively involved at how you need them to be.
Oh, they have to be active. It has been many years since I've worked with a business owner that was kind of hard to work with. One is that's one of the things I'm doing up front, Jason. When I talk to a business owner, is I'm, you know, it's educating them on the process, what they can expect. I mean, obviously I can't explain every little detail, but I try to have them open their eyes. And I think, you know, any really good business broker or any business broker out there that's been doing it a while is trying to educate the seller too. So before they even go into the process, they kind of know what to expect. And then what we're doing is, you know, through each section of the process, we're kind of breaking it down in the processes so we don't overwhelm them all at one time with everything they need to do. And we handle it in pieces. So it kind of works out pretty well with them. And, you know, a big thing to me too, is when, as a business broker, when you are talking to somebody, I, in my opinion, it's very important that you're selective on which businesses you take to the market. Mm. And part of that being selective, I think, is making sure that the business owner that you're going to be working with is likable and trustworthy, and they're going to be engaged throughout the process. And that's very, very critical. And if you get the kind of feeling up front that this business owner is going to either be difficult or is not, or they're not going to have the time during the sales process, really, that's not a listing you should be taking to the market anyways.
Yeah. And I know from my experiences, especially on the consulting side and the work that we do, is the speed at which somebody gets things back to you when you need it, let's say documents or even a signed agreement or, you know, paying an invoice or something like that, is usually an indication of both their urgency and importance to them, but also their general responsiveness, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I've seen it where, like, I've sent stuff to people or requests and weeks go by and they're not responding. And it's like, I basically don't want to work with you anymore, because if you can't do this, what's going to happen when it gets real? And it's a lot right. less fun than the initial stuff when you're all excited about it, right? And so where do you see that? And you know, where does that, like, when do you make those decisions? People just aren't responsive. They're not getting you that.
You know, I'm going to tell you, most of the owners that I talk to, I mean, I'll tell you, Jason, I probably have to talk to 20 to 25 people before I talk to a business owner that I want to take on as a client, and they are really ready to sell. And what I find is when you do find a seller that they've got a great business, they're have a really good reason why they want to sell. Usually right now it's because they want to retire. That's what I've been seeing the most the last couple of years. They tend to be very, very motivated. So it hasn't, I don't know if it's because I'm being so selective or the education part, but I don't really struggle when they want to sell and they really, really want to sell, they're moving, you know, because even in the beginning process, one of the first steps that we do is we do a broker's opinion of value for the business owner, let them know what the most probable selling price of the business is. There's no cost to that, no obligation to use our services after we do it. But what that allows them to do is it allows them to understand what their business is worth, and that helps them make the decision if they want to move forward. And at that process, you get to, because I'm asking for tax returns, profit and loss statement, a balance sheet, and a large part of those people fall off right there. You know, right there, you can see they're not sending over the financials, and you follow up a couple of times and they're just too busy for it. And if they can't send over a few P&Ls and a couple tax returns, there's no way they can do anything else either.
No.
And so that kind of flushes. I think right then and there, as I'm talking, I never thought about it before, Jason, until you brought that up. I think that's the turning point right there.
That's your natural filter you've built in, which I think is important. I think there's some brokers I've seen where I've talked to them and they're like really pushing those people to turn in the financials. And it's generally a pipeline issue. And the pipeline's not full enough, then you kind of like chase people more than they should be chasing you, right? That business owner has more to gain or lose by getting your help or not than you do, right? Like I used to joke about this all the time when I would sell. It's like, hey, it's 8 million people on the planet. Like I'm trying to help you for you. It's not about me or 8 billion people. And it's just like, same thing with this. Like you want to help them, but they've got to do the work. They've got to do it themselves. So I think that's important. You have that filter in, and if they meet it, great. If not, like you move forward.
You know, I think also too, with the business owners is that, you know, I think it's a sign of how well run their business is as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, I've already mentioned I'm very selective on the businesses I take on, and you know, the business owner that really struggles to get those P&Ls and tax returns, it takes them weeks or months to get them over to you. They're either not that motivated, which that's fine. But if they are motivated, and you know that from the conversations you had with them, and they're struggling to get that information over to you, it's kind of a sign that their business probably is not running as efficiently and effectively as possible, because they are, as a business owner, they're still running around with their head cut off. You know, the more successful business owners have gotten to a point, I'm sorry, I'm hitting my mic, have gotten to a point where, you know, they've got enough people working and helping them that their job is more to work on the business instead of in the business. Now, when I say that, I'm still working in my business, but I do have plenty enough time to work on my business. And I'm not saying that, you know, all 40 hours or 50 hours you work a week have to be working on the business. But, you know, I think as a business owner, you got to get to that point where at least, you know, 25% of your time is working on the business, at least. And when I can tell right away, that business owner, they're all they're doing 40, 50 hours a week is just kind of trying to keep their head above water.
Yeah. When they're a in the trenches operator or a professional firefighter in the business, then it's going to be really tough to get you what you need. And then for you to actually sell that business, because once a buyer starts looking at it, they're going to go, wait a second. Like, this is not a good deal. What am I buying? I'm buying a, you know, owner run dumpster fire. Like,
bandaging things every day, all day long, every day. You know,
I mean, we could talk more about that, but I'm curious, like, so, you know, with all the things that you've done and being a part of the associations and now, you know, chairman with the IBBA in this year, like when you look at other brokers, because you've talked to countless other brokers, I'm sure you've seen a lot come into the industry and a lot of people leave the industry. You know, what do most brokers get wrong about their role, about the industry?
You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, I've had the opportunity to talk to so many brokers across the country in Canada, and wow, there's some fantastic brokers out there. And well, I love talking to these fantastic brokers, these brokers that are really great, because, you know, they tell me inside secrets. I tell them inside secrets. You kind of make yourself better. And then you've got, you know, in any industry, I think it's any industry out there, you've got really great, great performers, and then you got good ones, and then you got really, really bad ones. And I think one of the biggest things out there that I see where brokers struggle is there's this philosophy, and I guess this is like my fourth time saying it, so you kind of get the main point of what I'm saying, is that there's too many brokers out there that have the mentality, you know, that are taught, list everything and anything you can. And, you know, whatever sells, play the percentage game. So, you know, if you look at it, you know, across the nation, it's estimated that only 10 to 20% of businesses for sale actually sell. You know, you throw a broker in there that's, you know, mediocre, that might increase to 30 or 40% of businesses being sold or actually sell. You know, I just think when you talk to the brokers that are top performers, high level brokers, they are very selective on the businesses they're going to take on. They realize that their time is money. They realize that, hey, if they're going to carry 25, 30 listings, but only 20 to 30% of them are going to sell, you know, they're carrying a lot of inventory that will probably not sell, and they're playing those numbers games. And then you're spreading across, you're spreading out yourself, and you're spreading out your team. If you do have a team, you're spreading everybody out thin, and you're, because you still have to handle all those projects. You still have to handle all those buyers that are inquiring and And then what happens to those few listings, the few businesses that they have listed are actually really good businesses. They're taking their time away from those and they're investing it over here, which is putting those businesses in jeopardy of possibly not selling, or maybe not getting the attention they need to maximize the sales price. Like I realize when you first get in the industry, you should be selling the small businesses, the businesses for $100, $200, $300,000. Maybe you're not as selective as somebody who's been in the industry for 10, 15, 20 years or longer. I get that. You can't be as selective, but you still should be a little bit, you still should be a little bit selective and not take the listings that you absolutely know are not going to sell. And, you know, as soon as you possibly can, you should start being a little bit more selective. And I think the important thing too is that if you're going to take on businesses that are going to struggle to sell, and you're a new broker and you're doing that because you're brand new, or you're in the industry for a couple of years and you haven't gotten to that level yet, I think it's really important that you explain to the seller the probabilities and the likelihood of their business selling. You know, like, hey, your business is going to be, you got a great business. I really like it. That's why I'm listing it. But I want to tell you, it is going to be a harder sale because of this, this, and this, but I'm going to give it everything I've got and try to get it sold for you. But just give them a realistic expectation, you know, to walk into a business owner that's 67 years old and wants to sell their business and retire. And you go in there with this really positive, optimistic attitude, like, hey, I'm definitely going to sell your business, blah, 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 blah. And in the back of your mind, you're going, it's going to be a coin toss whether this business is going to sell or not. You're playing with this person's biggest transaction they're going to ever have in their entire life. And they're counting on this for retirement. I just think you owe it to them to be honest and upfront with them.
And what's interesting is to think, like, the brokers that we work with, the brokers I generally speak to as well, they have really high success rates. If they're going to list something, they're going to sell it. I know for you, you are very proud and stand by and are happy to share, like, how much. Like, if you take 10 listings, you're selling 9 or more of those, right? Like, your effectiveness is really high. And what's crazy to me is think, like, the industry average is 10 to 20% sell. The people I generally speak to, which is my observation bias, are the ones that are good professionals that are highly effective and take on only the ones they know and everyone agrees the value and it's going to be sellable. So it only makes me wonder, like, oh my gosh, how many brokers out there aren't selling anything?
There's a lot. I mean, I don't remember the statistics. But I had seen some statistics before of, like, the average broker, like, lists 2 or 3 businesses a year. And that's it. If you average the entire industry, like 2 or 3 businesses a year, maybe that, I forget all the statistics. I shouldn't even be saying it, but it was really, really low. And so what's happening is the top, and you got to remember the top, these are averages. So you got to remember the top producers are selling, you know, X amount of businesses. And that means there's a lot of brokers out there that, you know, really struggle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild.
But we do have newer brokers in the industry, you know, that takes them a while. And then there's a lot of brokers that are older, you know, that have been practicing for decades and, you know, maybe they only want to sell 1 or 2 businesses a year. I mean, I look forward in, like, 10 years from now, I think that'll be me 10, 15 years. I'll retire, but maybe every year I'll take on 1 or 2 businesses to keep active and keep my brain in there and have fun and make a little extra money. And, you know, that's what's great about our industry is that you can have that option to do that.
I've spoken to a few brokers that have been in the game for a really long time, you know, 20, 25, 30 years plus. And they're like, yeah, if I do one, maybe two. Two is stressful. I'll do one a year, right? And so, but still, what's interesting is that maybe that doesn't change the volume across the industry, but their percentage, they probably take one listing, they sell one listing, right? So they're helping to the 100% section, right? You're at the near 100%, and then, you know, 80-20 rule, I guess, you know.
I'm really proud because in 2024, I sold my practice 90%. We sold 90% of my listings. And then 2025, wow. if the few that we have under contract right now that are left over for 24 close or 25 close, we'll have sold 100%. So I'm really excited. And I'm going to knock on wood real quick on that.
So let's talk about, you know, I think part of what makes you different and successful is the team aspect. And I know that you're really passionate about this and where the value is for business owners specifically, but everyone involved in the transaction. So touch a little bit on your team philosophy and or what you think makes for a good team, especially, again, this is for brokers that are listening to this going like, how do I play this game and how do I make my life better as a broker? And then also business owners who might, you know, find this and go, okay, how do I find the right broker for me?
You know, it started out with me, you know, I brought on somebody to assist me, you know, one day I was like, oh my gosh, so like 80% of what we do as brokers could be done with somebody that is making a lot less money and, isn't as critical, but it's critical for the transaction to get done, but it's not that complicated or difficult to do. Like, the 20% time in that transaction, that's the critical part. That's where, as a broker, you really need to focus on. That's whether that deal is going to get done or not get done. It's that's where the maximization of the sales price is going to happen, or the terms of the deal that are the best for the seller are going to happen. But there's a lot of miscellaneous stuff that we do, you know, like, you know, collecting the NDAs, you know, and all, I know right now there's automations going on with the NDAs. Those NDAs are automatically being sent out when buyers are inquiring about that. We have those automations, but there's still somebody that has to, you know, look at the NDAs, look at the financial net worth statements and the bios, and, you know, determine if that person is capable or not of buying the business and sending out the SIMs and answering basic questions. And, you know, and then, you know, get under contract and you work from contract to closing. There's so much just communication paperwork that needs to go back and forth between, you know, the buyer and the sellers and the CPAs and the attorneys and the lenders and everybody that's involved in the transaction. And if you really think back, and I wish brokers would spend more time like taking a step back and really pay attention to what they do and realize that 80% of what they're doing could be done by somebody else. And when you start changing that mentality, your whole practice is going to change. And you know, how many of us walk in as business brokers? We talk to a lot of business owners every day. The guy that owns that business is going to sell for $200,000 or $300,000 versus that guy that's going to sell their business for a couple million dollars. One of the big keys to that is because the guy that has their business going to sell for a couple million dollars is because they've learned to delegate and they're okay with delegating. Whereas the small business owners, and I used to work in that space, great people. But, you know, I think the typical business owner, what they're doing is they've become a business owner because they're very confident in themselves and they're able to take that leap of faith. And because they're confident in themselves, they don't feel like anybody can do anything better than they can or as good as they can. So they're afraid to delegate. And you can only grow so much as a business owner because if you're doing all the work yourself. And so I talked to the new business brokers and a lot of them are like, no, you know, I don't trust this. I don't trust. Well, you're going to stay that same size because you're going to be busy. You're going to, you know, you're going to be spending, let's say, I don't know, out of that 40 hours you're going to work a week, you're going to probably spend 30 hours of that doing work that somebody else could be doing for you. And so, you know, bring on that first hire. Yeah, I know it's a big hit out of your pocket. You're now paying somebody a salary, maybe a salary plus bonus, whatever it is. And it's a big hit out of your pocket, but you got to look at it and go, you know what? That first year that they're aboard, I might make less money bottom line, but you're investing and you're building assets for your company and you're training that person. So the year after that, and you go out, you're going to be able to handle more work because you got that person that's helping you. And so, you know, and I'm a big believer as you grow and you keep doing it, you can keep building out your team. So like right now I've got a listing manager that once we list the business for sale, Their job is to gather all the information, the furniture, fixtures, and equipment list, photos, you know, and I've already got the P&Ls and tax returns and things at that point, but like pictures, You know, we do use an outside writer. We do use an outside graphic designer to do our sims. Like, there's a lot to pull together, pulling down together all the advertising, marketing. She's in charge of that. And then I've got somebody that is now they sold businesses on their own for 7 years. And now they're a part of my practice, and they only help me sell my businesses. And they're the buyer's agent, and they're working with a buyer. And, you know, they're pre-qualifying the buyers. They're answering the buyer's basic questions. They're handling the buyer seller phone calls. I mean, for you brokers out there, you get on a buyer seller phone call, it's a very, very important part of the transaction. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that there's somebody on that call that really knows the brokerage aspect. I would never put an admin person in there. You got to remember this person I have, you know, they sold businesses, they're on their own for 7 years. But you know, you don't necessarily need to be on those calls. I mean, 95% of the talking is happening between the buyer and the seller. And in fact, I think the broker should be talking as little as possible on those calls. And then I've got a closing coordinator that once we go under contract, she's running from the contract to closing. She probably handles 95% of that transaction. I just step in when there's a problem. I am involved. I know what's going on at any time throughout the process. I mean, I talk to my team members, you know, every day or at least 3 or 4 times a week. And I'm copied in on emails and things like that. So I know what's going on at any time. But my point is like, you start out with that one assistant, and then you keep adding assistants. And Jason, I know I've just been talking, but I get a lot of brokers that come up to me and they go, how do you recruit agents to your mm-hmm. office? How do you recruit agents? That's a big thing. How do you recruit? And I'm not a big fan of growing your business by recruiting brokers. And the reason is because to bring on a broker, yes, you train them for a week or whatever, you send them some classes and they're learning, but for them to be really successful, you have to mentor them. And you spend a lot of time really mentoring them. And when you're spending all that time mentoring them, obviously it's taken away from your production. And then what ends up happening is 2 or 3 years later, when they're done and they know, they may not know as much as you do, but they know a good amount at that point. Now they're looking around and they're going, yeah, I'm going to go down the street for 5 or 10% better split on the commission, or I'm going to go start my own practice. And I'm like, good for you. Go start your own practice. I want everybody to live right. their life that they want to live. But to invest all the time, energy, and money into somebody for a couple of years, and then there's a good chance they're going to leave for 5 to 10% more, or they're going to start their own company. I just think the better way to grow your practice is, or grow your business, is to build out your practice and start building out that team as you go through. So right now I'm at the point where I'm not actually doing any of the actual brokerage activities. I'm overseeing the entire process from beginning to end, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think it's so important. I think it's an interesting distinction because, you know, some brokers I know out there build a model where people just don't leave. They're a part of it. They know what's involved. You know, the brokerage may give leads, and, you know, they also support and they do a lot of those activities. And then there's what you're saying is basically the model where you bring someone in a few years down the road. You've just trained your competition to go out there. I had a friend years and years ago, they were in the chiropractor space, two different friends that I had. And basically that was the model there as well. Like, new chiropractor comes out of school, goes work somewhere. And then essentially after 2 years, they're now opening up a place down the street, and you've now just made your competition. And there was different models in there to like make it a part of, you know, almost like a franchise model instead. So I think it's important. And then going back to what you were talking about, like the delegating issue, which is fascinating. I love how you brought up the fact that it's like, if you were to try to sell someone's business, you know, is it a $100,000-$200,000 business, or is it a $2 million business? The difference is it one person doing everything or not. And it makes me think of two great books. If someone, you know, needs help in understanding this, one is called Who Not How by Dan Sullivan. And then the other one is Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. No idea why both are written by guys named Dan, but like, both of those are really good books to understand the leverage, because the problem is, if you're trying to do everything yourself, there is a limiting capacity on time, right? You can only work so many hours a week. And even if you're like, you know, this is the problem with some attorneys is, you know, even an attorney, they could increase their billable rate, but at a certain point they're capped, and it also all relies on them, right? And there is no freedom, and there's no structure, and there's really no business, which means there's a lot of brokers out there I know that are going to get to the end of this and be like, they don't have a sellable asset. They've made a bunch of money, hopefully invested it in something, mm-hmm. but they don't have a thing.
I think also what happens too is that you know, how you need to look at it is, I don't care how good of a broker you are and how great you are of a broker, all the different hats that we wear throughout the process. I mean, you, first of all, you have to be a visionary, but yet you have to be very good at attention to detail, which there's a conflict there. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm the type of person that's very good at vision, but comes attention to detail, I'm not. And then you have things like you have to be really good at financials, yet you have to be very creative. You have to be able to build the right. You need to be able to do a little bit of graphic design. You have, need to be able to be social and be able to communicate with people. Like there are, if you think about all the different things that we're doing as a business broker from A to Z and all the different hats that we're wearing and all the different skill sets and qualities that you have to have. Now, we might all be, we may not be bad. There might be somebody out there that's not bad at any of them, but there's no way you're great at them all. No. You know what I mean? And if you really want to have a great, great practice, then when you're hiring these people for these different roles, think about the skill set that's really required in each part of those processes and hire somebody that's like an A-plus person at those skill sets. And that's who you're going to hire and you're going to train. And because I don't care how good you are, you can't be great at all that stuff. You might be great at these things. You're good at these things. You're okay at these things. You're bad at these things. But you're hiring the people that are helping you that are good for those particular skill sets for that part of the process.
And fundamentally, here's the thing, is you might be good and or great at several things, but there's certain things that you like doing that are going to be your natural tendency to do if you have a choice, right? If I'm looking through my to-do list for today, I've got these things or I've got these things. And these things excite me and these things I enjoy and these things I absolutely don't enjoy. And then what happens is they just don't get done. It's fascinating that that book I mentioned, Who Not How, the one by Dan Sullivan, is it says like instead of learning how to do something, find the who, somebody who actually enjoys that thing, right? So whether it's marketing or accounting or programming or building a website, there's somebody out there who loves building websites and they eat, sleep, and breathe building websites and it brings them joy and they love it. So don't try to put yourself in that category. Find that person who just like, that's what they do and they nail that and it's fun to them. Most people don't realize that. Most people don't think like, well, how could somebody find profit and loss, you know, accounting fun? It's like, there's people out there. Just go find them. Don't try to do it yourself. Because what I find is people just don't do it, right? Obviously, we're on the marketing side of things. We just see people as like, they don't like doing marketing. It's the low thing on the list. So it just doesn't get done. But everything else they're doing instead.
I had this project that I needed to work on. This is recent too. I've been putting off for like a month and a half. I mean, it's a special project. It doesn't affect any buyers or sellers or anything like that. It's a project of creating an asset for our practice. And I've been meaning to do it for like a month and a half. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I finally said, I'm not going to do it. I'm never going to do this. I'm going to keep kicking it down. And I was like, God, I got a guy on my team that just loves this kind of stuff. And I was like, hey, you want to handle this? And he was like, great. And a couple of days later, he emailed it back and goes, here, it's, you know, it's for you, ready for you to review. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I should have done this a month and a half ago. So
it's that, the, you know, and it goes against the, you know, the control thing, like you said, or people think they got to do it all or think I don't have the money or I can't do that or I can't afford that. It's like, but what happens if it doesn't get done or where's the value in it getting done? So, it's always a fascinating dynamic.
And it's not just, you know, finding the right person and putting them in the place that has a skill set for each section of the process. You know, it's also like you want to have really good systems and processes so that, you know, you're not just hiring somebody and saying, this is your job and you're training them and that's it, but creating, you know, job descriptions, creating systems and processes on how they're supposed to operate so that they're doing the quality of work that you're expecting them to do. You know, you can't just say, hey, do this, train them and do this job. You've got to train them on how you want them to look at it from an approach. You know what I mean? From a, you know, maybe you give them some flexibility in how they actually want to operate and work, but you should be creating with them the systems and processes so they're down and they know what they're at. So you can expect the same quality every single time. And then if you do need to hire somebody to replace that person, there's a systems and processes. And this is what I tell, you know, all the people that are working in my practice is like, I need everything you do to be a system and a process, and anything that's repeatable, you know, we can find easier or more efficient ways to do it. But I want everything to be written down so that if you win the lottery, because I never want to say the boss, you know, situation, but if you ever win the lottery, you don't ever have to come back to work. We've got a whole book there that we can now take that book, and with some mentoring, we can train that person in that new role.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts, and in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in four ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
Instead of not having anything down there. So I think systems and processes is very important when you want to scale your practice up.
And what I'll say is that most, like, the solopreneur business brokers or just solopreneur people in general, like, they're not system builders, they're not process builders. So the thought of bringing someone on board or adding to the team and doing it the proper way, which means having the systems or having some documentation, seems so overwhelming. Like, just don't do it, right? So if that's resonating with you, it's like, oh my gosh, how would I do that? If you're listening to this, like, you, at some point, you've just got to sit down and dedicate some time so that you can build the leverage, no matter what. Even if you're outsourcing to somebody or handing off anything, like, you still have to do some work. And again, what's interesting is we're having this conversation, Jim, about business brokerage and teams within brokerage, and, like, for brokers out there listening to this, but it's also the same thing you're looking for from your clients, the business owners that you're trying to help. Like, they need to give you the financials. They need to give you everything and give you the system so you can then do your role as part of their team, right? In this short-term thing. And so for brokers to realize, like, what you need business owners to do that you want to work with, you know, and help them exit, something also to look at in your own business. It's funny how, like, it's almost like the cobbler's kids have no shoes. It's like, I want you to do this thing, but, like, I have no systems and processes, and I'm just, like, running around like crazy.
You know, and I know sister, and I know brokers are like, oh my gosh, you got a listing manager, you got a buyer's agent, you got a closing coordinator, I got an assistant now. Wow, you got four people working on you underneath your practice. Wow, that's a lot of, what you do is if you hire somebody today, like, you get a big deal and you close a big transaction and you got all this money, like, you can do two things with it. You can take the money out and you can invest it. You invest it in, you know, whatever stock market or mutual funds you want to. I look at it and I go, I can make more money. I mean, I do my investments, but I look at it and I go, I want to take some of that money. I want to reinvest it into my practice because I know I can beat 10 or 12% that I would get in mutual funds. I know I can beat that if I reinvest in my practice. And so you reinvest it and not just take it out and spend it or invest it in mutual funds. You know, if you landed a big deal today, you know, say 100 grand, it's your first six-figure thing. That's the perfect opportunity to say, I'm going to take some of that money and reinvest. And I would say the first thing you do, hire an assistant. Mm-hmm. Hire an assistant and think about the things that you would want that assistant to take off your plate. And then think about the skills that would be required for that person and go out and look for somebody that has that skill set. And if you did that today, just think, in 2 years from now, you're going to do more transactions. You're going to handle more work. You're going to be able to provide better service for your clients. And then let's say 2 years from now, you add another person to your team. And then 2 years after that, you hire somebody on your team. So literally in 4 years, you could be sitting at, you know, the practice with three people underneath of you assisting you in the transaction. And think about how much more deals you could do with three people assisting you in the transaction. And then you could be, I know brokers are out there now thinking, well, you know, how do I get that many listing leads? How do I, you know, because now, like, I'm struggling to get listing leads right now. And, you know, it's just me. And you're talking about supporting a whole team. Well, that's part of reinvesting. You're reinvesting in your marketing and advertising. And the more money you start to generate within your practice, obviously, the more money you have for marketing and advertising, and the more money you have for marketing and advertising, you are going to exponentially see more leads. And what I mean by that is, I know to say, well, if you're spending $1,000 a month in marketing and advertising versus $20,000 a month in advertising, you know, obviously you're going to, you know, I think people be like, you'll get 20 times the amount of leads. I think you get more than 20 times the amount of leads.
You should.
You know what I mean? It's not, it gets exponentially better as you pour money in there, you know, because the people are seeing the advertising over and over and over again.
And I think with all of that, like, the visual that comes to mind, which I think is important for brokers to understand, is that, let's say you're farming, you're growing your own food to feed your family, right? So you have a farm, you grow food, whatever extra food you have that you guys don't need to eat, you just go sell, you take that money, you squirrel it away, right? Or, right, what you're talking about is you have surplus, you sell that surplus, you use that surplus to buy a tractor. So instead of doing it by hand or with farm animals, right, now you have a tractor. Now you can create even more the next crop and the next yield. And then you buy, a processing machine, or you buy whatever it is, so that over some point you're just creating this, and everything is helping you do more. And
eventually buy more land, and you know what I mean? You just keep growing and growing and growing.
Same thing with the marketing, right? The marketing is the input. And so if you go from $1,000 to $20,000 a month in spend, it shouldn't be 20x. It should be 50x. It should be a lot more X return, because it should scale. Like, one input into the factory should lead to a bigger ROI out the other end, which, again, it's fascinating because this is the same thing you would expect from your business owner clients that you're working with, that they're producing more at the back end with a team that's not owner dependent. And so it's fascinating to talk about this, with the brokers, who are a lot of them playing a solo game, right, where they're doing everything and then not reinvesting in whatever they need.
And I think at the end of the day, you're giving better customer service to your clients at the end of the day. Like, my closing coordinator, like, when that was my first hire after my assistant, and after, well, actually she was an assistant. She moved to my closing coordinator. I told her, I want you to do these things. And I had her do things that a lot of brokers cut corners on, you know what I mean? Like, something simple, when a buyer puts up their escrow deposit, with the attorney, and you check with the attorney, make sure that the escrow deposit was up, and you get the receipt, you send that over to the seller, so the seller has it. A lot of brokers will kind of cut that out, and they might just be like, oh, it was put up, but they're not getting the receipt. They're not sending it over to the seller. There's little tiny things throughout the entire process a lot of brokers kind of skip over because they're little. But when you have somebody who's dedicated to just doing that, then you don't need to cut any corners. You can make sure that everything is done the way it should be done. Because if you're going to do this, it's not about just, I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can. You need, because that's a bad attitude. You need to be looking at it going, I want to build an A+ company, and that we're doing everything the best we possibly can. And, so.
It's so true, right? And looking at that, and just from the customer service. And what's fascinating is when you do that, in my experience, all of those other things, and you provide that amazing service, then what happens? That leads to the referrals, either from the business owners who you helped in their exit, and they're telling other people at the country club or wherever about it. Could be the buyers that are having such a great experience, and then they come back to you later on to sell the business again. Or it could be all the other parts, the professionals in the transaction that, like, I've done enough transactions with brokers. This was amazing. Mm-hmm. This is who I want to send my referrals to. I want to work with this person again, right? And then that just expands the business over time.
This is how I feel too. And for the brokers that are out there that, have heard me speak on a couple of occasions, at least, they probably have heard this. Because I say this quite a bit, but it's because it's a philosophy that I believe in. I don't know if this is a true story. I'm going to tell a quick story. I don't know if it's a true story, but I don't care if it's a true story. I think I like the story, and I like what it represents. And that is, supposedly in the 1970s, there was a Japanese company that made the best muffler in the world. And an American company came along, got the Japanese muffler, and they did reverse engineering. And reverse engineering is when you take something apart, your competitor's product apart, and you examine it to see how it was built and maintained, things like that. So the American company did the reverse engineering on this muffler to see why their muffler was so much better than their own muffler. And when they did that, they're looking at it and they're going, it's basically all the same parts as our muffler. There's no real difference. Why is it so much better? And then when they examined it closer, everything about that Japanese muffler was just a teeny tiny bit better, down to the screws and the nuts. But when you put the whole muffler together, it was exponentially better. And that's how you've got to look at your practice, is that as you're building it, like, just, you would have beat your competition that way. I think everybody's always looking for that. What's that one big idea that I can crush my competition with? And if there is that, fantastic. But sometimes that's really hard to find, that big idea. Sometimes it's just every little thing that you do in your process, if you just make it a little bit better, your practice is going to be exponentially better than other business brokers' practices.
It's that combination of the incremental improvements or differences that, you know, can set it apart instead of that one big, amazing, you know, differentiator. It's usually lots of little things.
I think people skip that a lot of times, don't they, Jason? Like when there's a problem, people tend to say, okay, what's the solution? What's that one solution to that problem? And sometimes there is one solution, but a lot of times it could be multiple little things that need to be done to resolve that big problem.
And to avoid it down the road, you know, might not be just one big thing, but it's, you know, could be a compilation of lots of things that build, right? The compounding effect.
Jason, I'm going to tell you the opposite thing. The first company I owned, we did wedding videography and wedding photography, and we eventually got into tuxedos. And we had grown into a pretty decent sized business. We had an office in Orlando, one in Las Vegas, one in Hawaii. And we grew it to a pretty big, we were young. I think when I started the company, I was like probably 24, maybe 25. So we were pretty young. And when a problem arose in the very beginning, when we first started, a whole time I owned it, when a problem arose, we would take care of that problem. We would satisfy the customer. Whatever we had to do to make the customer happy, we would do it. But one thing that we did not do is we did not go back and fix the thing that caused the problem. And it might have been just the littlest thing. It could have been the littlest problem, and we just resolve it, move on, continue with our day. And so what ended up happening is we built this pretty large company. We ended up losing it because September 11th, but it was a pretty large company for you know, three young guys. But it was like we had a cracked foundation. Like every day, like we had the same problems popping up their heads constantly because we never, when there was a problem, we make the customer happy, but we would not go back, fix our systems so that problem wouldn't happen again. So maybe that problem would only happen like once every 6 months, but after 10 years of doing that, and you've got 500 little problems, every day you're dealing with these same problems that are popping up their head. So when I, you know, got into business brokers and eventually started my own company, that's what I kept drilling into the heads of the people that work with me. If something comes up and we have a problem, we got to make the customer happy, but we have to go back and we have to examine our process and systems, figure out why that happened, and we need to fix it so it doesn't happen again. And it could be the smallest thing, even you still got to do that.
And for what I've seen, especially in running sales organizations in the past, and then also doing the consulting I did for years, is that a lot of people end up as professional firefighters. So they're just fighting this fire, then fighting this fire and this fire. Yeah. And what they're not doing is taking time to step back and saying, who keeps lighting these fires and how do we stop that from happening? Right. And then as a consultant, the nice thing and the benefit I had as a third party is going into an organization and I'm not fighting fires. I can go find the source and figure out how these fires keep getting started. And then we can put a stop to that because everyone else is running around like crazy and just handling one fire after another instead of like stopping long enough. It goes back to the in the business versus on the business, because so many people are in the business, they're in the trenches, they're in the fires, they're in the mess, and they're not stepping back to go, how do we keep this from happening so that we can actually grow and scale instead of perpetually like up and down and up and down and up and down, right? And I think that's important. Is so for you, one of the things that's fascinating about what you've done with your brokerage career to here, nearly 25 years, is you were, I don't want to say generalist because I feel like that undermines everything that you've done, but you were basically business broker, helping businesses across lots of different industries. And then in recent times, you've said, you know what I want to do is I want to be industry specific, but not just one industry, you've chosen two. So how did that evolve? Where do you think that's valuable? Why do you think that's a good approach? And you know, how does that play against the more generalist kind of every business broker that's out there?
Yeah, and you know, I'd say, first of all, since I first got in the industry, there has been people that have specialized in industries, but not very many. I think coming out of COVID, when we were all shut down and Zoom started appearing and, you know, just, I don't know, business changed, I think, because of COVID. we are no longer, people don't look at, you have to be local and selling that local business. You've now broke down all the state barriers and you can sell, I think you can sell businesses all over the country if you want to. And, you know, I think that's the first mindset that needs to be shifted is I can only work in my own little city. You can open up and say, I can work anywhere in the country that I want to work. What I'm seeing, Jason, is I'm seeing, even though it's always been there since the beginning of my career, I'm seeing more and more people becoming specialists. I think that being a specialist as a business broker is going to continue to grow. I think that's the future of business brokerage. And I looked at it and I said, you know, in 10 years from now, that is going to be a key thing. And I'm thinking, if I don't start picking my verticals that I really want to work in now and really market and advertise and, you know, get my name out in those industries, I could be in a place in 10 years from now where people have saturated the marketplace so much with marketing and advertising and building contacts and referral networks that it'd be really hard to break into that industry. And I think the positives of going down a vertical is good for you. I think it's good for the sellers. I think it's good for the buyers. You know, I had a gentleman, this is probably about 15 years ago, a friend of mine. I actually helped him buy a business. And then I actually helped him about 7 years later sell the business. And we became friends. And he met up with me one time. It was about 15 years ago. We met up, we had lunch. And he was like, Jim, I want to get into business brokerage. I want to do business brokerage and wanted to see what your opinion was on that. And if I could join your company. And I was like, Steve, I'm going to tell you the truth, that if I could redo my career all over again, I would not have been a business broker. And he goes, really? I go, yeah. Cause you need in my state, you have to have a license, a real estate license in order to sell businesses. I said to him, I would have been a residential real estate agent. And he goes, you would have been a residential real estate agent. I go, yeah. Except I wouldn't be a residential real estate agent selling one or two houses a month. I would be a residential real estate agent selling 300 or 400 houses a year. You know, I would be building out an entire team. I'd be building out systems and processes. You know, the thing with a house sale is that it pretty much stays the same from point A to point Z. You know what I mean? Through the process, I know you have little hiccups here and there, but really the sale of a house is just, it's a rinse and repeat. And if you can build a team that you could just throw it in there and you build out the marketing arm, the advertising arm, and you're just making it happen, it's very systematic procedures. And at that time, 15 years ago, I was like, you can't do that in business brokerage. Every business is different. It's just, everything is different. It's hard to systemize, da, 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 da. You know, since then I've changed my opinion. I think it can be systemized. I've proved that it can be systemized. But it can be systemized even more if you specialize in a vertical. Mm-hmm. Because now you have, if you think about it, you know exactly what questions to ask a seller. Not the 3 or 4, but the 50 specific industry questions that buyers are going to want to know. You know what they are. You know what you're looking at. You know what the KPIs that they're looking at are. You know what the benchmarking should be for that industry. You can talk the seller's game. The seller's like, okay, he gets it. He understands where I'm going. And also, if you look at when we're working with buyers, I mean, what are we doing every day as a business broker is we're playing that solitaire game where you have put down all your cards and you pick up one card, you pick up another card, you make a match and you put them aside. And if you don't have a match, you put the two cards down again. You keep trying to make matches. Well, if you're selling manufacturing businesses, automotive businesses, medical businesses, attorney offices, you're selling all these different kinds of businesses, it's hard to make those matches. Because all your businesses and all your buyers are different. But if you're specializing in one or two verticals, then it's easier to make those matches. You know, if you're specializing in just one thing and that is it, all your sellers are, you know, automotive repair guys, all your buyers are automotive repair guys, it's easier to make those matches. You know, obviously you have to worry about things like geographical boundaries and when you know what the buyers looking geographically and the size and things like that. But you know, if you are going to do a vertical and you're going to be you can't be selling just in your local city. You'll starve. You have to attack maybe not the whole country, but you need to attack at least 5 or 6 good states. And when you're doing that, you've got to attack the businesses that are going to sell for at least $1 million. You know what I mean? You don't want to do a vertical and sell, and you live in Florida and sell a business in Kansas City that's worth $150,000, $200,000. It's probably better for a local buyer to buy that business. But when you're selling those businesses that are going to sell for $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, $15 million, the buyers that are looking at it, they're either going to relocate if they're an individual, or if they're an industry player or a private equity group, they're going to be sending somebody else there to operate it. Mm-hmm. So your buyers, when you get to a certain level in the value of the business, you're now breaking down that geographical barrier for a lot of buyers. I mean, you're buying a business for $2 million. You're no longer, I mean, you buy a business, let's say $150,000. You're probably not going to move to another city, you know, to make $75,000 a year or whatever it might be, $60,000 a year. But, you know, if you buy a business for $2 million, hey, I'd move me and my family, you know, to a new city. And for the private equity groups and industry players, they're going to be putting a manager in there anyways. So there's just a lot. And then it's easier to train your team. You know, you can talk more intelligently to buyers. You're going to become better as a broker. I mean, I'm a firm believer, Jason, that verticals are the way of the future. And that it's going to be much easier for you as a broker, and it's going to be better for your seller and your buyer. I mean, we could do a whole webinar just on that, Jason. So I'll shut up.
And it makes sense, right? And I think, you know, one of the things where that plays into is that humans generally think they're the center of the universe. That's a whole nother webinar topic as well. But they, if they're making an important decision or they want help, they want to feel like the person helping them understands and knows them and everything about them because of what they built, right? So there's always this like over under, let's say, on a business owner who's selling a business, picking a generalist broker or an industry specific broker, where it's like, I feel like you do understand it. When I hear you talking, because I've had other conversations with brokers who are against industry specialization. And I hear you talk, it makes sense, right? From everything from the KPIs, the language, the questions to ask, dealing with the buyers, like what the buyer's looking for, and being able to connect those dots in such a powerful way that's so effective for that business. One of the best ways is to know that industry really, really well, and you know where that specialization comes in. So I think that's fascinating. And I could see that as like the wave of the future, or what's, you know, especially business owners are like, okay, I'm going to sell my auto repair business. Who should I go to? Especially if they're just cold searching stuff online, who, you know, what's the best way to exit my business? And then, you know, Jason, where would you fall in on that?
You know, Jason, you were talking about brokers being against it. And hey, there might be legit reasons why people don't want to do it. But I'm going to tell you where my practice changed a lot. I felt like I was a pretty good broker. I was honest, ethical. My sellers and buyers were happy, things like that. But when I started doing those podcasts, you know, the Let's Chat podcast, and that opened up my world to brokers all over the country in Canada. And I was talking to some of the best brokers out there, and it made me a better broker. And then I tell them what I was doing, and it just, you know, helping each other out and making those things happen. I started challenging my thought process, the whole thing that I had been trained and had been told and instructed in my early part of my career, and that we preached to each other over in my little circle that I had was used to working in before I kind of went across the country, was it confined me. And as I challenged a lot of the things that, the more I challenged the things that I was first taught when I got into the industry that I just continued to do for year after year after year, my success got better and better and better. And, you know, if brokers listening to this out there, you know, I think it's easy to say, I think it's better to be a generalist. Challenge yourself. Maybe it is better for you to be a generalist, but challenge yourself. I think people resist change. And I think the more you look at possibilities out there and you break down that mindset of all this is the way I was taught business brokerage should operate and work. And you get rid of all that. And you look at it from a strictly what's the objective of selling a business, and what kind of practice do I want to have, and what's the best, most efficient way to make this process work? You're going to start throwing a lot of things out the window that were unnecessary barriers that for some reason us business brokers put on each other that are not necessary, if that makes sense. And one of them is you don't need to be your local broker. I mean, like a lot of the things I was first taught is you should be selling businesses that are within, I forget what it was, 30 miles of your location. Something as simple as that. And that goes to the vertical situation. But you know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I just remember a couple of years ago, I was like, I just kept throwing things out that I was taught, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I know another big one. I know another big one, Jason. This is a big one. I was always drilled in my head that when you go under contract with a buyer or seller, you want to keep the buyer and seller as far apart from each other as possible. Mm. Because if they're interacting with each other, one, they might try to cut you out of the deal. That also, you know, they're going to get fatigued and, you know, they're going to, you know, they're going to get on each other's nerves and personality issues and all this. And it's just better that you are the only one communicating with the buyer and the seller and you keep them apart. I did that for years. I did that for like 15 years. Wow. Jason, the proper way to do it is you go under, like, okay, when a buyer and a seller go under contract, it is critical that the buyer and seller like each other. From the buyer's perspective, yes, they're going to do their due diligence on the business, but at the end of the day, they're going to be taking a leap of faith. When somebody's buying a house or buying a piece of commercial property, they could care less who the previous owner is. But when they're buying a business, they've got to like and trust that seller because they're going to do their due diligence, but they're going to take that leap of faith. And then for the seller, you know, they're thinking about, you know, a lot of business owners, their employees mean a lot to them, at least the successful ones. Their clients mean a lot to them. And in a lot of good cases with good business brokers, I mean, business owners, their suppliers are important to them. So it's important to them that they find a buyer that meets the culture that they currently have, that are going to treat these people well and they're going to treat them right. So the seller's got to like and trust the buyer. Well, if they like and trust each other, why are you keeping them apart? Like, and I cannot. So what we do is we have a controlled environment. So every week when we go under contract, every week we get on a video call, buyer, seller, myself, my assistant, my closing coordinator, and we talk. You know, the seller gives update on what's going on in the business, good, bad, or ugly. The buyer is asking some questions they might have. They're giving us an update on the bank. My closing coordinator is interjecting and saying, hey, these are going to be the next steps. These are things that we need to work on. This is where we're behind on. We're all communicating with each other. So we're all getting on a call. We're all talking with each other. And it's a controlled environment. We're not having the buyer and the seller talk directly to each other. They're part of that Zoom call, but they know what's going on. And what's nice is not only everybody feel, and I understand as part of as business brokers, our job is to communicate by both parties. And that's what I tell the buyer and the seller on the first call. Our job is to communicate with you, between you guys, so each one of you guys know what's going on at any time. But I want you guys to hear what's going on from each other. I want you to hear it directly. I want to make sure we're not missing any, you know, communication in this process. And you know what happens when you do this is that when you do run into a problem, and I don't know if any business brokers out there run into a problem when they run into a deal almost every single time. The buyer and the seller are more likely to want to work it out because every week we're getting on that call. They went under contract because they like the other party. Now we're meeting every week and they usually tend to like each other more and more because they both buyer really wants to buy. The seller really wants to sell. We're all working towards the same thing. We're trying to get to the finish line. It's not the seller versus the buyer and the buyer versus the seller. It's all of us getting across the finish line. And when a problem does rise its head, much more likely to be able to make it work. The buyer and the seller are usually more flexible because they've kind of gotten to know each other even more.
You basically created a team where everyone is working to overcome whatever challenge or issue comes up for the sake of everyone accomplishing what they're trying to accomplish, and versus what sounds like the old school way that you're taught, which is more of like the attorney model, I would call, which is, you know, attorneys keep the parties apart so that the attorneys can do their thing and battle each other and feel like they're doing the best, or, you know, way to charge more fees. In this case here, you just actually want to just facilitate the relationship, not just the transaction, but the relationship. Because the other part that's very true is once the deal is done, once the money hits and it's over, that's usually not the end of the involvement by the seller. You know, there's the legacy part, but even there's the involvement. And so it's the relationship is just continuing. So it's got to be, you know, a team event.
You hit it right on the head, Jason. And I tell you, if you're a broker, if you're out there listening, seriously, like, challenge what you've been taught. Challenge the traditional old school way of thinking. You know, the industry's changing and it's changing very rapidly.
I love it. There's a line I don't even know who to give it credit to, so I won't even try, but, you know, don't believe everything you think. And so, you know, just challenge those thoughts and, you know, why does that exist, or is there a better way? And then going back to your team aspect and building a team, right? It's that same philosophy. The fact that you build a team also means that mm-hmm. you're comfortable having a team with the buyer and the seller together. So I love all of that.
I want to touch on that real quick too. You know, I think that it's all about building assets. You know, if every mm-hmm. year you can build more and more assets within your practice, the better it can be. You know, and you know, that might be adding an employee every 2 years. It's, you know, making your own website, you know, writing a book, whatever it is, just keep adding those assets. And it just each year that goes by, you collect more and more assets, get your credentialing, you know, whatever it might be. And I'm going to tell you, if you're out there as a business broker, you don't have to own your own brokerage company to do this. You could be working for another company and you're creating a team, your own team with a, and if you notice what I keep saying, I don't say my company, I keep saying my practice. And that's what you get. And within your practice, you can create a team.
For people out there who, you know, prefer to just be a company of one. In fact, there's a good book I recommend called Company of One that advocates for that solo business owner mode with help, right? So getting, you know, contract delegated help for some of the tasks. Like, it's also about, you want to build that lifestyle business. You want to make it as easy as possible and reduce some of the stress and burden is also those assets you're talking about, the things that will help, you know, without needing to be build a big team. It's what lifestyle do you want to live? And then how do you facilitate it? Going back to the other recommendations. And I think that's great. And I think this is a really good place. We're going to stop here. Normally we would talk about marketing tips. We could talk about a deal that got away. I'm actually going to save those for the after shows. This is like a perfect place to stop the main episode. And then we'll make the after show a little bit longer one, because there's a lot of things that I still want to talk to you about. For people tuning in and listening, Jim, do you know where they can go? If they just Google Jim Parker,
they'll find a lot of stuff.
They'll find the different websites, lawn care, auto repair, the podcast you had before, the things you're launching now, all the stuff that's out there, all the different assets that you've created, info about your team. There's so much stuff. We'll have some good links in the show notes as well, so that people can tune in. Jim, I appreciate you being here. This, like, I'm just looking at the time, like, so much time has flown by in this conversation. You shared so much. And again, I opened the episode with this. One of the things I appreciate you about so much is you just care so much about helping other people. Like, everything that you shared is, you know, so valuable for anyone out there, both brokers and business owners, you know, in the transaction. So I appreciate you being here and giving so much of your time as well, to the audience.
Thank you, Jason. I didn't realize we've been on for over an hour. I
really know, right?
I just wanted to keep going.
We'll save you. Yeah, of course. And we'll do some in the after show. For everyone tuning in, make sure to check out the after show. We're gonna keep going with this and see what else comes up there. And appreciate you tuning in. Make sure to reach out to Jim, follow what he's doing, learn whatever else you can. And obviously, if you need help with anything, reach out to Jim. We appreciate you being here. And as I always say, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.